Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome. And hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room here as we bake buns together. Last week's show, I talked about how much fun it is to connect with like-minded people at a show or conference. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show is with Dot Mail. This month, we're focusing on developing our home for play. Our homes are busy, busy, busy places. We have different styled houses as well. Some of us have large open space rooms for each activity that we need. And some of us have smaller rooms where each room is used for many different things. Not only that, once we have children, we see that their stuff just creeps around the house. Yeah, we want to have an environment to be playful and serve its purpose. So how do we maximize that space? In fact, how do we develop a simple, playful environment for parents? So I hope you'll stick around. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider pinning on Pinterest or leaving a review for us on iTunes or sharing with your friends. Thanks. I'll be right back after this break.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home. Whoa!
Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Today I'm talking to Dot Mail, author of Parent and Child Group Handbook, A Steiner-Waldorf Approach. She's a teacher, trainer, and group leader for the Simplicity Parenting Workshops. She's been running local and national courses for over 20 years, helping parents who want to reflect on their family values and make positive changes in their home environment. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello, good morning.
It's lovely to have you on the show. Let's get started, as developing our play space and home environment for play is something I know a lot of listeners have been asking about. Can you share a little bit about the importance of rhythm and routine in a play space?
Yes, I was thinking about this. Rhythm's a funny word. We just associate it with music, don't we? But there is another way of looking at it, as being a sound with a space. And I see rhythm in the family life being a bit like having activity and then quiet. This breathing, what we call a kind of breathing in and out, activity and quiet. And that's so important in family life or in children's life generally. Otherwise, what can happen, I think, more and more in our busy lives is we just get more and more active during the day, never stop. And then children find it very hard to relax and even go to sleep at night. So that's a sort of the rhythm. What I mean by rhythm is this this activity rest times during the day. And the routine is having those rests and those activity periods at the same times so that children know what's coming up next and they can relax into the day rather than being surprised by things they didn't know were going to happen,
right,
or different from another day. So it's just that simple thing of getting a rhythm, what we call rhythm and a routine in the day. So important for children to feel happy and secure. And then they can play.
Is our child's home environment meant to be engaging them, entertaining them, or something else?
I think it can be easy for parents these days to feel that they need to be entertaining their children all the time. Maybe we're told that children need relationship, and they certainly do. But it's not good when we feel we have to entertain them. A home environment is for children to experience life and also play and also relationships. I don't think we need to put anything special on for them. We need to give them space to play and explore in their own way, and also then to have time to be able to communicate with them just in a very easy way, not entertaining them or trying to educate them in any particular way, which is unfortunately what a lot of toys and educational programs are trying to make us do with our children. Not necessary.
No, but it's quite difficult to find toys nowadays that don't tell you what they can do for you.
Yes.
And so it can be quite tricky as a parent to go with the idea of I want to buy a toy or I want to have an activity in my home that will engage them when there's so much information on the front about how much it's going to entertain them.
Yes, it's got a bit out of hand, really. I think the Simplicity Parenting book really, I think, explains and describes what's beginning to happen in family life. In the end, we have to kind of pair right back to what's appropriate at different ages, and we seem to have lost that a bit, thinking that tots and five-year-olds should be having the same sort of cognitive experiences as children that are older. We've lost the idea that, well, the understanding that young children just need to play, and they play in their own way by imitating what's going on around them and then putting it into their own play. And if you watch children, that's what they're doing. So they just need the ordinary stuff around them, ordinary stuff of life. You know, toddlers are really happy to have their own little kitchen in your kitchen. They have their little sort of pots and pans and all their cupboard that they can open and empty out while you're doing your thing. And you'll begin to see, even from when they're 1 year old, that they're beginning to imitate what you are doing. The best thing that adults can do in the home is to do the ordinary everyday things of home life, like cooking and baking and hanging out the washing and doing a bit of dusting, things we really don't want to do, but actually is what children absolutely need to see. They don't need to see us behind computers or on mobile phones. I mean, that's not going to teach them anything about life, really. What they do is, they need to watch everyday life, and then they can take it into their play, and that becomes creative play. So toys can be, for the very young child, very, very simple. Very simple. The everyday things of life, pots, pans, spoons, bowls, veils, wooden blocks, simple maybe things from nature like pine cones, lovely, natural, simple, warm objects that are open-ended, which they can play with, just play with in their own way. The more specialised a toy becomes, the less a child can really play with it.
Today I'm talking to Dot Mel, Simplicity Parenting Trainer and Group Leader, with class titles like Using the Extraordinary Power of Less to Raise Calmer, Happier and More Secure Children. Dot, you mentioned Simplicity Parenting, which is a book and workshop. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, the book was written by Kim John Payne, who is a family counsellor, and he realised, after he'd been working in Vietnam, I think, with children who'd been through war and all sorts of difficult situations, he then came back to Leafy, England, to also run a counselling service, and found that children here were suffering in the same way as children in Vietnam, like a post-traumatic stress syndrome. But of course, the children here hadn't been through anything like children over there. But he realized that what children were suffering from was just anxiety and stress from having just too much stimulation and stuff in their lives. And it was pushing them along a continuum to behavioral problems. And he realized that if he went into their homes and helped these families to simplify their lives, then the children's behavior came back to normal. On the basis of that, he wrote the book, Simplicity Parenting. And then from that, there are trainings, which I did, for leaders to run groups to really help parents to reflect on their family values and where they are and whether there's anything they can do to help their children have more space for playing in the home and less stress. I mean, I can give you an example, if you like,
yes,
from the book of this little boy who refused to get out of his pajamas in the morning. He just absolutely refused to get out of his pajamas. Both of his parents were very busy working. Unpacking it, they realized that this little boy never knew what was going to happen next, that he didn't know who was going to take him to school. He didn't know who was going to pick him up. And he'd realized that the safest thing he could do was just not meet the day.
Oh.
Just to stay in his pajamas. And once that had been realized and the parents could become more sensitive to his needs for security and knowing what was going on and just slow down a bit, then he was willing to get dressed and to then meet the day. I think a lot of problems that we think we don't know where they come from with children are caused by this overstimulation and just too many things, too much stuff on all sorts of levels in their lives.
It sounds as if the Simplicity Parenting Workshops is an ideal time because it gives you a time to step away from all the busyness of life that we all have and focus with a group of people on making life much simpler at home.
Yes. And it's on four levels, and it works its way through the book, the Simplicity Parenting book. So the first level is the physical environment. So we spend time in the group looking at the toys, whether you can actually get rid of quite a few of the toys. All children these days in England, Western world, have far too many toys.
Yes,
and that just messes up the whole way of being able to play. There could be other things in the physical environment that can be looked at, and then the parents go away, make a commitment to change something, and then come back in 3 weeks and we talk about it. The next level is to do with rhythm in the home, finding those routines, even like the sort of simple ritual of having a meal around the table every day, maybe light a candle, just to have a nice peaceful moment in the day. Like the bath time ritual, to have something that actually happens every day that the child can feel very secure in. And again, parents can decide what they would like to change, if anything, take it away and then come back 3 weeks later and we can talk about it. The next level is about the amount of scheduling that happens in children's lives. I mean, even from being an infant before they're toddlers, there are such an enormous number of activity groups that parents can go to with their little ones, and the children can get absolutely overstimulated by it all. So it's just looking at the number of things that we expect our children to do and maybe pulling back a bit so there's more time for children to play, just to play deeply in a relaxed way in the home without the telly on, but with, you know, in their own creative interests. And then the last layer is just looking at the amount of media that comes into the home, adult media, which can also be very anxiety-provoking for children at a kind of subliminal level. But news being on, it's not nice to know what's going wrong all over the world. Children need to know that the world is good. It's the home where that, you know, where they experience that first.
So I like the Simplicity Parenting classes. It gives you a chance to focus, and you've given the four different types that you can actually focus on. Practically, I think most of the listeners know that they should be doing all of those things. And, you know, like we know that if we eat too much sugar, it's good to make us fat. You know, we know these things, but actually doing them, it just seems really hard. I mean, how hard is it not to have a chocolate bar? But yeah, we still do. And how hard is it not to have the television on in the background or not have a space full of toys, but we still do. I wondered if you could talk about how you approach this whole looking at the way you parent with your partner. Because I know a lot of people listen, they are on board with, I really want to do something, that's why I'm here. I listen to the show because I want to learn how to do it. But then they now have to convince their partner that all of these toys have to go. And their partner's thinking, that's a lot of money you want to throw away. Or, you know, they're saying no TV at all. And they're saying, what about my cable channel? I mean, how do you have this conversation with your partner?
Yeah, it is important to get as much as to get the two people, the partners, to talk together. And sometimes it can be difficult. I think it's important if they can both read, for example, the Simplicity Parenting book, then I feel that there is a basis, everybody's on the same page. And then there is the whole communication of negotiating the sorts of changes that that each person might want to take. And into that discussion, and it's something that we do in the course as well, is to look at where our values have come from. Because the values that we might hold very dearly to might be the values that we were brought up with, or they might be in opposition to what we were brought up with. And it's important to be clear about what we're actually bringing into a partnership with children. And it's often a discussion that doesn't take place at all, does it, until...
No, yes, and that's the problem. There's often conflict, and it's not till you have children that you realize, really? You really want to do that? That's not possible.
So it's really important that this time is given to working it out, to just seeing where those differences are. Then it becomes possible maybe to find a compromise, you know, and in any partnership family there are compromises, so that's what you have to find. But giving that time... To find that, like, the foundation rock of the marriage and what these values are, what the values are that we hold close to our hearts in this family. And it doesn't have to be like any other family. This is our family, and this is what we hold as being important. And it can be done with humor, and it can actually bring couples together in a new way, closer way, than before, because at least, you know, they're beginning to talk about these things rather than just getting upset with each other when, you know, when things are being pulled in different directions. And also, once you begin to make changes and you begin to see the difference that it makes to the children's, you know, mood or play or how the family's getting on, well, then that itself is a real spur to making the next step. It kind of gives confidence to, you know, well, actually, this is working. You know, this is a good idea. The fact that we've got rid of a load of toys in the house and the children's rooms just a clearer and, you know, more just nicer places to be in. And the children seem to be playing better and they're not fighting so much as they were before. You know, family meals seem to be, you know, really nice events that we all look forward to. need to be able to, you know, do it just to, and then you really do see the difference that it can make.
I like the way that you are suggesting that we test out different things, because nothing is written in stone. We can try different ideas out with our family and see, well, you know, I like the idea of minimizing all of the toys, and you can minimize all the toys and see what happens. And if you're not happy with how many toys you've minimized it to, you can do something about it. You know, it's the same with the candle, like you said, at dinner. That works for our family. We have a special night where that will happen. And as soon as we turn the lights down and bring the candle in, it just changes everything. But that won't work for every family. You know, some families will say, well, that didn't work. And that's okay too. It's okay to try all of these different ideas and find what works for your family and feel comfortable with that and sharing it with other people.
Yes, I think, and this is another beauty of having Simplicity Parenting courses, is that parents learn from each other. One dad recently who said he'd realized that if he turned the radio off in the morning while the children were having breakfast, that it changed the whole mood of the meal. The children weren't being worried by what was on the news. It was just a whole totally different sort of mood to the morning breakfast. And other parents actually picked up on this and thought, oh yeah, no, I might try that. You know, so people can learn from each other. Just small things can make a huge difference. Breakfast or getting out of the house, you know, to go to school can be a real hassle, can't it? So if you can actually make it more pleasant for everybody, like put all the another thing is to put the clothes out the night before for the younger children, so they're not fighting about what they're going to wear, you know, as you're trying to get out the door, and maybe simplify their clothes so they don't have so many choices. I mean, who needs 12 summer dresses? You know, we don't really need that many summer dresses, you know, so it's kind of looking at how we can just simplify the whole business so that it's going to be an easier, less stressful experience for everybody.
I think also just looking around the world, we sometimes can be very focused on where we live and what everybody's doing in our immediate neighbourhood or country. But there are many places around the world where it's just not the same. You know, we don't have huge play spaces or large playrooms that's dedicated to one activity. You know, they don't have a playroom set aside. We have a lounge, and that has to double up as a dining room and a lounge for everybody to be in, and a playroom for everybody to be in as well. And maybe the kitchen is also the place that you eat, as you know, that so you have to realize that just because you see your neighbors have a setup in one way doesn't mean that you have to continue in that vein. You can find really what works for you, and if that means for your family you need to reduce and simplify, then give it a go.
Well, yes, exactly. And there's also the outside, isn't it? We're coming more and more, I think, fearful of outside, and children need to be outside for all sorts of reasons. You know, there's so much more opportunity for real play outside in spaces where they can, you know, dig and climb and make dens. And if you live in an urban area, that can be quite difficult these days. And some children that maybe may only go out to bounce on the trampoline occasionally and then go back in the house. I've seen that. But it's so important that we give our children these opportunities to spend time outside more than anything else, really. How are we going to have a generation of children who care for the planet, which is going to become more and more crucial if they don't have any relationship to it?
We've talked a little bit about toys and simplifying them. The problem that I think many of us face is I don't want to say overbearing, that's the wrong word. Friends and family who feel that they need to gift you with lots of things, which is very nice and very much appreciated. And spouses and other people that maybe bring lots of toys and other things into the home as well. That there is this feeling that the more toys you have, the more things that you have, that's good. We need a smaller, more manageable amount of toys. Why is that?
Because when there's too many toys, a child doesn't know which one to play with. It can be very difficult to focus in on what real play is, which is entering into imaginary games, which involve being able to transform and change, you know, sort of objects in the world. Toys that are too fixed, you know, too perfect and too sort of technical, are very specialist. And too many toys, and a child becomes overwhelmed and doesn't know, or might just ignore most of them. I mean, most children will probably ignore most of the toys they've got. But underneath that, the child begins to think that nothing is of very much value because, you know, there's so much of it. Maybe there's always something else that would be better than everything that they've got that they don't play with and isn't given any value anyway. You know, so it's a very complicated dynamic that begins to happen for, I think, in a child's mind when they have just too much stuff. And what Kim John Payne discovered by getting a big plastic bag and halving the number of toys that children have, and then halving it again, and maybe even halving it again, and just putting out those toys, keeping those toys that the child, first of all, really played with, those toys that were more open-ended, that the child could play with in different ways, that were more simple, that the children actually began to play with them in a much more creative way. I think we're beginning to forget what it looks like to see children playing well. And I have to say, I mean, having my son grow up in a Steiner school, and if you go and watch the children play in a Steiner kindergarten, you see what real play is, how children enter deeply into imaginative play and building dens and doing all sorts of things. And it is changing all the time. And as they get older, then, of course, children have their own particular hobbies and interests that can develop if given that space, where they can develop their own very particular interests. And if we kind of crowd them out with too many of these educational toys, complicated toys, too much, they can't even enter into play. And they're now discovering, of course, that children who haven't had good play opportunities when they're young grow, when they get to teenagedom, they can actually be quite depressed because something's missing, that deep flow, you know, of life, creativity is not easy for them to connect, to find. I mean, adult creativity comes from child play. That's the sort of continuum, you know, into adulthood. So less toys means more creativity. And you have to do it to see the benefit.
I love the idea of the bag, because you can put everything away and you can, you know, put it in the garage, in the loft, wherever you want to take it. So it's not completely gone. Gosh, I keep making it sound as if I don't want all these toys gone. But I know that there are lots of listeners that this is a hard thing to do. It's like saying, you know, taking all the sugar out of your house will be really good for you. I think we know that we have to find what works, and it takes a little bit of time to adjust. And so taking out all the toys and only having a few back in the house sounds a really good plan, because you know this toy worked really well, let's get rid of this one. That's not, I thought that they would enjoy it and they would use it, and they're not. And you can rotate it in and out, and then you can start saying, okay, I actually can get rid of all of these other toys that I had.
There might be some toys you just want to get rid of straight away, like the ones that really annoy you. I would, you know, get rid of those. Yeah. The ones that are broken, the ones that are developmentally inappropriate, the ones where the concept behind the toy is very fixed, so the child really can't do anything with it. The toys that are, you know, supposed to give you a developmental edge, you know, maybe the child probably won't be very interested in that for very long. Or these toy multiples, you know, where you're expected to buy more and more of the same thing. I mean, sometimes you might see a child that will use those toys and actually then develop their own totally different imaginative play around it. And then, of course, you can keep them. But you have to observe in a way that it's so important that the parent observes your children and just see what they play with and see and just keep reviewing it. I mean, there are some toys that you can go straight away, and there are some toys, as you say, that can go into the loft, perhaps. And there are some toys that maybe you feel, you know, grandma and granddad, they spent so much money on it that they can just come down on special occasions, you know, these toys. And so you find your own way with it. But I suppose the baseline is the less the better, and the more open-ended, you know, and that would include, you know, having sort of blocks and veils and things that you can make dens with, the simple, more simple dolls and these kitchen corner, for boys, things that you can make things out of, and lots of, you know, if they're possible to have wood and planks that you can actually build dens and such like, and rope, those kind of simple everyday materials, you know, a good cardboard box, you know, if you've got a new washing machine, you know, that box will be a great plaything for a while. The kids will love it, you know, to make it into dens and all sorts of things. And then, of course, there's the materials for doing art and craft, that you can sort of, you know, make things with. Just those raw materials, you know, that can be used in different ways, all having their own little place. They're not just all bunged in a big box, but that in different baskets, so that the child can easily find what they want, and all on levels that the child can reach, you know, so that you can really tidy things away and the child knows where to find a favourite ball or a favourite doll, you know. It's not at the bottom of a big pile of stuff in a box somewhere.
Yes, that famous dumping that we see when they just upend everything and you're like, no, as they just spread everything everywhere to find the one thing that they wanted from a container.
How frustrating for them. You know, how much nicer if they know that it's there. And how then they know also that it's valued, that you're giving it value when they're put in a nice arrangement and it's nice and neatly put away, you know, rather than everything just being dumped in a big container and sort of shoved under the bed or something. What we do.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's been brilliant talking to you about all of these types of concepts. It's really actually, I've been thinking for some time about the toys that we have, because it just creeps. You sort them all out and you think everything's fine, and I have three different aged children, and so, you know, everything is just, oh, let's just leave that one because your brother can have it and your brother can have it, and it just gets everywhere. And so it's been really refreshing just talking about how we can just go ahead and do this. We should just go ahead and try it, not just listen to you and think, yeah, we should do it, but not do anything. So it's
we also think our children are going to be incredibly upset, you know. And as the thing is, we need to do, when they're young, actually, we need to do all of this without their help. I mean, if we try and get them in on it, they're going to be saying, oh, no, that's my special, you know, and you won't get rid of anything. So you have to see what they play with, see what they don't play with, get rid of the things that they don't play with, and then just step back and see whether they notice. And often they don't, actually. They're quite relieved that they don't have to just, keep having to throw things around until they find actually what they want, you know, that somebody's actually taken charge and sorted it for them.
It is powerful, isn't it, when the children just kind of go, oh, this is so nice, and they have no idea why it's so nice.
Yes.
But we know that it's so nice because we've changed the environment that they live in.
Yes. And we have to think of the future. You know, what are we creating in terms of children, you know, the next generation, if they don't see that we value things and we don't need masses of things, if we actually just value some things that we know they value, you know. There's a whole value level going on here, isn't it, that we need to work out in families, what we're raising our children to, what sort of world we want in the future, and what sort of values we want adults, our children to have when they're adults.
So where can we find out more information about you, your work, and Simplicity Parenting?
Yes, well, Simplicity Parenting have their own website. It's called simplicityparenting.com. And it is an American organisation, but there are several of us being trained up in the UK now. So you'll find my details on that website. You can contact me through the number that's on that website. I've got my own sort of profile there.
Is it an international? It's an international organisation, so we would, wherever we are in the world listening, we might be able to find a class. Do you think
it's suddenly exploding? Really, maybe over the last year, from just doing trainings in America, they now, people are training from all over the world, different countries. So it is a movement, if you like. I think as we realise that, you know, we need to do something, you know, we need to wake up, really, to how we're being manipulated by toy companies and other people that want to sell us stuff for our children, and we have the choice to say no. And so, yes, I think, and so certainly people, wherever you are, you'd be able to find somebody who can run these courses. I run them in York and London, could possibly run them elsewhere, but that's quite a good, you know, good range. I mean, you either live in the south or you live in the north in England, so.
And there's certainly the book that you can pick up, Simplicity Parenting.
Exactly, yes, you can buy that very easily off Amazon or in a bookshop. Every parent should read it. Yes. It's a really helpful book, and I haven't ever met anybody who said that they regretted reading it.
Yes. And it's a very simple read. I mean, I have it here and I'm really enjoying it. I'm just reading parts at the moment because I've got too many books on the go.
Yes.
That's the problem. But it's only 218 pages.
Yes.
So it's not a really long read, although there's a lot of things that you probably want to pause over and think about.
Yes.
and develop over time.
Yes.
But you certainly can dip in and out of it. You don't have to read the whole thing cover to cover. You can read sections and...
Yes, sections. And just empowered. Taking one section at a time. But I would certainly suggest that you try and read it with your partner, you know,
yes.
that you certainly feed back to them what you have read and talk about it with them. But there's a lot in that book, and it's very compassionate and it's very non-judgmental, really kind of understanding how we all want the best, for our children. It's just we're under enormous pressure these days. This book helps to sort of cut through all of that to
yes.
essential, really.
Brilliant. Yeah. Today I've been talking to Dot Mail author, teacher, trainer and group leader for the Simplicity Parenting Workshops. Thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, author of 48 Days to the Work You Love, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. As always, the show notes have links to Simplicity Parenting. The Raising Playful Tots website not only has the show notes, but links to the books we talk about. Past shows are archived there, information about how to listen to the show. Because I know many of you are looking for an easy solution to listening, and there are so many different ways that you can listen to this show. And so, you know, you can nip on over there and have a listen or have a look at some of the different things that we have going on there. I have a long list of other parenting podcasts. Feel free to add to the list. With World Read Aloud Day, the first week in March, on the Play Activities blog this week, we revisit founder Pam Allen's interview and find 10 unusual places to read aloud as well. If you're looking for ways to cultivate a read aloud habit and answers to questions like, how do you read aloud to children who are older and younger at the same time? Or when do you stop reading aloud? Then go on over to raisingplayfultots.com/89 for all the links. We had some fun on the Facebook page this week, looking at fun read aloud books and writing the next line of the popular story. What word or phrase has really had an impact on you as you listen to the show this week? There were a lot of things that, even while during the interview, really had a big impact on me and made me think about the things that I'm doing with my children at home and what am I teaching them by the things that I'm doing. If you have a comment or a thought about the show, thought about this interview, then join us on our Facebook page. That's Raising Playful Tots is the extension at the end there. I'd love to hear from you. So how are you all doing with your play activities? Because we're well into the new year now. So how are your plans working out? Remember we did that play audit back in January and into February? Well, we're into March now. How's it been going? One place I'd love to encourage you to go to look for kid play activities is a Pinterest board, a collaborative Pinterest board. Pinterest.com/playdrmummy, and it's the Kid Blogger Network Activities and Crafts Board. Right there, right now, you'll find over 3,265 activities to inspire you. So go on over and pick one. I contribute to that board along with more than 80 other playful people. So you can't be stuck for an activity anymore. You can visually see a whole load of different activities that might tickle your fancy. It's been great having you listen today. Thanks a lot. Take care, and I'll speak to you all soon. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 89. Come on over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, laugh, and learn together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.